Hello and welcome to a new edition of RAE, Radio Difusión Argentina al Exterior. We are the foreign service of the Argentine radio, and we are going to be bringing you the news, the sports, and an interview with climate change expert Tony Phillips from Ireland, who lives in Argentina, has been living here for several years, and he came to the studio to talk about the impact of climate change in Argentina, as well as other environmental issues. Walter Danesi is our sound technician today. My name is Fernando Farias, and this program is at Mondays to Fridays at 10:30 p.m. UTC time on the shortwave frequency 5850 kHz, shortwave frequency of WRMI, Miami Radio International. We are also streaming our shows through rae.com.ar, and they are also uploaded to our webpage as podcast. You can also listen to us via our app for mobile devices that you can download for free. For contacting us, send emails or letters to us. The email address is qslrae@gmail.com, and the physical address is Maipú Street 555, Buenos Aires City, the Republic of Argentina. Let's get started now with the news. These are the headlines. President Javier Milei travels to the U.S. to meet Elon Musk. The government will investigate alleged excessive increases in private medicine. Ecuador defended before the OAS its decision to invade the Mexican embassy to arrest a sheltered politician. The Casa Rosada sent a new reform bill to Congress following the collapse of the omnibus law in February. Colombia. Former President Álvaro Uribe to go on trial for allegedly pressuring witnesses. Sports. Boca Juniors beat Paraguay's Sportivo Trinidense in the South American Cup. And these are the news. Argentine President Javier Milei traveled to the U.S. where he will meet with Elon Musk. The head of state left Ezeiza Airport in Buenos Aires on Monday night for Miami. In that city, he will receive an award from the Jewish community in recognition of his support for the State of Israel. He will then travel to Austin, Texas, where he will be received by Musk at the factory of his electric car brand, Tesla. According to reports, Mr. Milei will talk to the owner of the X social media network about investment possibilities in Argentina. At the end of his US tour, the president will travel to Denmark, where he will meet with Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen. In Copenhagen, the leaders will sign a contract on the purchase of 24 F-16 warplanes to expand the Argentine Air Force fleet. The Casa Rosada sent a new reform bill to Congress following the collapse of the first, the so-called omnibus law, in February. The package was negotiated with some governors and legislators of the so-called pro-dialogue opposition, which includes the coalition Juntos por el Cambio, Together for Change. The central point that was agreed was the restoration of income tax for salaried workers with a monthly income floor of $1,800. With fewer than 300 articles, the new basis law is shorter than the original, which included some 600, but it keeps several of its goals, such as the comprehensive reform of the state, the privatization of public companies, and the deregulation of the economy and the labor market. The government of Ecuador defended before the OAS its decision to storm the Mexican embassy to arrest former Ecuadorian Vice President Jorge Glass. The statement was presented before the Assembly of the Continental Group in Washington by Quito's envoy Alejandro Dávalos. He explained that Glass did not meet the requirements for asylum, and in no way can he be considered a politically persecuted person. For Dávalos, by granting asylum to the former vice president, Mexico was obstructing the Ecuadorian justice. But the head of the OAS, Luis Almagro, rejected this argument and affirmed that the invasion of the embassy is a transgression of international law. Glass is accused of corruption and was convicted by a court in his country, but he claims he's innocent and that he's being persecuted because he was a member of the government of former progressive president Rafael Correa. The government will launch an investigation into price increases in private medicine. This was revealed by sources at the Commerce Bureau to the agency Noticias Argentinas. According to this information, the Commission for the Defense of Competition will seek to determine whether HMOs agreed among themselves to fix prices. It will then investigate whether there was a cartelization in the area of prepaid medicine, as it is called in Argentina. The measure comes after Minister of Economy Luis Caputo said in an interview that the HMOs had declared war on the middle class, but for their part, companies claim that the fees they charge were very out of date due to state caps that were scrapped by the Milei administration last December. In Colombia, former President Álvaro Uribe will go on trial for alleged obstruction of justice. He's accused of bribing witnesses during a case he himself initiated in 2012. That year, Uribe denounced a leftist legislator for linking him to far-right armed groups. But the Supreme Court dismissed the accusations against Congressman Iván Cepeda. The prosecutor's office then began investigating the former president himself and determined that it was him and not Cepeda who tried to manipulate witnesses. And now, sports. Boca Juniors won the Copa Sudamericana after defeating Sportivo Trinidense of Paraguay at home. The only goal of the match was scored by Aaron Anselmino. Boca are now top of Group D in the cup with 4 points after their opening draw against Nacional de Potosí of Bolivia. The Buenos Aires side are now dreaming of winning this trophy that they won in 2004 and 2005 and forgetting the Libertadores final they lost to Fluminense last year. And these were the news on RAE, Radio Difusión Argentina al Exterior.
RAE, Argentina al Mundo. RAE, Argentina, 面向世界.
RAE, Argentina vers le monde.
RAE, Argentina to the world.
RAE, 世界に向けアルゼンチン.
RAE, Argentina al mundo.
La RAE, Argentina al mundo.
RAE, Argentina in the world.
RAE, Argentina al mundo.
Folks, we've got a guest on RAE today. We've got Tony Phillips, who's an Irish researcher and expert in climate change. He completed a thesis here in Argentina at the UBA, the University of Buenos Aires, and he's joining us in our studio today. Welcome, Tony. Thank you for coming.
Good to be here.
Well, Tony, to begin with, I'd like to talk about a very current issue here going on in Argentina. Everybody's concerned about the dengue outbreak, in particularly in Buenos Aires, that is severely affected by it. 10 years ago, this was a tropical disease, and it wouldn't affect Buenos Aires. Nobody would think of Buenos Aires going through something like this. Can you separate this situation from climate change? Is it related?
It's partially related. It has to do with people moving. The dengue is not something that moves. Between mosquitoes, it moves between people. The mosquitoes carry it from person to person. So if you have more migration from tropical areas, then you're going to have more potential for the disease to spread. But in order for it to become endemic, in order for it to be a local disease that doesn't need any more introduction from, say, Paraguay or Brazil. In that case, yes, the temperature. Climate needs to change.
Yeah, and it has in Buenos Aires significantly. We are now in early April, and it feels nothing at all like autumn temperatures. We are having temperatures of over 23, 24, and Buenos Aires feels more and more like a subtropical city, and this is the connection.
It has become so. I mean, the subtropics will move with the tropics.
Mm-hmm.
If for example, let's take the Amazon region. You know, if you're talking about the Amazon is tropical. But if it gets any hotter, it becomes a savanna, and the tropics move south.
Yeah.
So the subtropics move south in front.
Is that going to happen in Brazil?
It's quite possible.
Yeah. Well, the temperatures in Rio de Janeiro last year, and this year too, they hit records with 60 Celsius heat factor. I mean, there are many alarming signals that you can see all over the region. You drive, for example, to Mar del Plata, 400 kilometers, and the landscape, the pampas, the wet pampas, the humid pampas that used to be so green when I was young, they look more and more brown.
Yeah. Yeah. What's happening is there's a mixture of two things going on. So you've got a gradual, you know, increase in temperature. With the temperature, a hotter air can carry more water, so that you have more humidity and more possibilities of torrential downpours. And at the same time, that is making the El Niño and La Niña cycle more concentrated. So that's why we're having the flooding right now.
Yeah.
And this flooding began in from rains coming off the Pacific into Peru, and the first thing that hit Peru, well, this is, you know, more than about a year ago, when the first touches of El Niño arrived, was a dengue epidemic.
Yeah.
And that has been moving across now, and it'll last another, it may last, it depends, usually it's a year and a half is El Niño, but it could be a little longer. And this is not a super El Niño like we had in 2016, this is a lighter version. It's a little bit stronger than normal, but not a super El Niño.
How bad Argentina in the global scenario is being hit by climate change? It's like one of the worst hit countries, like la mitad de la tabla, as we say. We are going to see more severe consequences in the year to come.
Recently, in the last, say, 10, 15 years, it hasn't been hit that hard. It's been the northern hemisphere that's been hit harder, because the main changes in temperature have been driven from the Arctic down. And because if you look at the northern hemisphere, if you look at the actual sphere, it's mostly land all the way around, you know, all of Russia, North America. It's a lot of land and a couple of seas. In the very far south, we only really have three pieces of land. That's, you know, the southern cone of
South America,
a little of Africa, and Australia. The rest is all
Antarctica.
Sea. Yeah, well, Antarctica, you see, they revolve around the poles. So the fact that Antarctica is a landmass, it doesn't really affect us. It has to do with the poles. But it will affect us when we have large-scale collapse of the icebergs.
The sea level.
They're already starting to collapse, and when they collapse in the Arctic, it has no effect on the level of sea, because it's floating ice.
Yes,
floating. But when it happens in the Antarctic, we're going to see meters of sea rise. Yes.
Meters. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that means cities disappearing.
It means cities flooding, and then you have two options. Either you leave the city and you move the city somewhere else, which is a very... That's happening in Indonesia, the capital.
They are moving cities inland.
They're moving
inland,
the city. They literally are moving the city
to a higher level.
And abandoning the city. Or you do something to prevent flooding, and there's a limited amount of things you can do in Argentina to deal with that, because you have so much water coming from the inland into what is kind of an ocean, but it's really actually another river, the River Plate. So you've got, you're going to get flooded from both sides.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we've seen that already.
Now, something that is interesting and I wanted to mention is the contrast in being concerned about climate change. Developed nations versus developing nations like Argentina. I'm asked by, I work as a tour guide and I'm asked how concerned are Argentines about climate change? And in general, it seems that it doesn't move the needle, as we say here, when it comes to the political debate or the political decisions. It's not part of the platform of any candidate. and it doesn't seem to be as important in countries like Argentina, the climate change or the environmental agenda, as it is in countries of the north. Is this a rich country's issue for the people?
In general, the larger green parties have done better in richer countries. I mean, Germany.
Why is that? Because you have basic needs covered and you can be worried about something else?
It's also an educational issue and a media issue. It depends on how much people are talking about this thing.
Mm-hmm.
You're right, though. The social needs in Argentina are getting worse. So what we need to do is to deal with those problems first, but at the same time, keep people actively concerned with what is really going on, because in the end, climate change is going to do a lot more damage than poverty.
Absolutely. Yeah, but it's difficult to transmit that to people who are concerned about their everyday needs.
Yeah, it's an immediate concern. Mm-hmm. In when you're looking at 2050, people aren't looking at 2050. People are looking at 2024.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Now, where do you stand in this issue, this rift between Mercosur countries and the European Union? You know, these developed countries, especially France, for example, they seem to be more concerned, and they pass laws that there may be some protectionist laws in hiding, but they pass these environment protection laws that prevent trade with countries like Mercosur members. And countries like Argentina or developing nations say, hey, you had your development 100 years ago, your industrialization 100 years ago. Don't we have the right to not be concerned about that and push forward our development by maybe using the world in a non very environment friendly way?
I think that second one you talked about, where you say we need another 100 years to destroy forests and so on, that really no longer applies.
No.
We don't have 100 years. What we do have, though, is the issue of climate justice. So who pays for the damage?
Okay.
That is really an issue. And obviously the richer countries are trying to avoid paying for that. And they can do that if they stop these laws, which have to do with loss and damage, they call it. So if you have a city flooded, huge damage to infrastructure, who pays to fix that?
Mm-hmm.
That could be, it could be said that the oil companies or the major polluters should pay for that, even mm-hmm. in other countries where the damage is being incurred by people that are not responsible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, we know that climate change, I think over, especially in the West, I don't know, in some other parts, has become an extremely politically charged issue. And there are leaders, like, well, the president of Argentina is one of those who say that climate change is a hoax, or at least that he doesn't believe climate change in the way that scientists believe. How is it possible to convince, using facts or science, people if they are going to believe that it's already a political thing?
Well, you know, the climate isn't political.
Yeah, I know.
We try to make it political because there are monetary interests, there's money and power involved, which moves against the interests of changing things so that climate change is less of a problem. Mm-hmm. So what you have is diffusions of ideas, in this case, ideas that are false ideas, you know, fake news, if you like, but on a scientific level.
Mm-hmm.
And those are diffused through think tanks, which actually support the kinds of political parties that are now in power in Argentina and were in
or in
Brazil
other countries
and
the US.
In the US, Australia too, they had like 10 years of climate deniers. They in the US you had a a senator entering into the Senate with a snowball, showing look, it's a snowball. in Australia, you had a person throw a lump of coal at somebody just to show like fossil fuels are what we're all based on. It's ridiculous, but
yeah. Well, the point that they made, they're trying to make, is that the world has been going through these processes and periods throughout the planets every a million years or 2 million years, in which the temperatures go up a little bit and then they go down. This is it's not man related. They keep on saying that, but the science does not support that at all.
Okay, so yes, we've had in the last eon, which has been hundreds of millions of years, we've had cycles of ice ages and warmer periods, but they have been natural cycles. What we have never had is humans digging up gas, coal, and oil from underground from hundreds of millions of years ago. I mean, I'm a geologist as well, so I know about mining. So that's what we've been doing. We've been sucking these fossil fuels out from under the ground and burning them into the atmosphere. So we're actually changing the chemistry of our own atmosphere.
Yeah.
And that is what's causing climate change in this case.
Yeah, and this is the first time that's a fact. This is the first time it's happening in the history of the planet Earth.
The dinosaurs didn't burn coal,
Exactly. Mm. Exactly. Well, how far are we from a point of no return in this regard?
Well, that seems to be changing, and it's not changing in the right direction. In the last 2 years, there has been an acceleration, especially in the temperatures of the sea, which affects us hugely because we're very close to the sea, which have moved above a general sort of slow rising temperature and have jumped in 2023 and 2024. Now, part of that is an El Nino effect, but the other part of it, we're not sure exactly what's happening. Now, one of the theories is, and this is something, it's a once-off effect, so it's not a bad thing really, but what may have happened is that sea shipping, of goods by the through the oceans in large tankers and so on, used to burn what was called bunker fuel. Bunker fuel is a kind of diesel, a filthy diesel. So, like in Argentina, you've got two different kinds of diesel for your car. Mm-hmm. One of them has more sulfur in it. Well, the version for the oceans, for the big ships, had even more sulfur in it, which is why sometimes you see a big ship coming into a port.
It polluted even more.
And it's yellow, the smoke coming out of the top. So this is what has been used for decades. And just like a few years ago, they banned that. And so now the shipping is using cleaner diesel. So there's less sulfur being burned into the into the atmosphere, especially above the oceans, and that is causing less reflection back of heat. It's a mixture between the smoke that's coming from this and the clouds up above it. So that may be the reason that we've had this jump in temperatures. It'll be a once-off thing because if we keep the air clean, then it's just going to continue basically at this new higher level. But it's not a good deal. So what that has meant is that basically where we're looking at like trying to get things done by 2050, we should probably be thinking about getting things done by, we've less than 10 years.
Wow. Argentina has been said all the time, even by people who are not so into the environmental agenda, but that Argentina has got a great potential unused yet, most of it in renewable energies. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, basically the two main renewable energies, apart from there are certain ocean technologies too, which could be useful. The main ones are eolic, that's the wind. And
talking
solar.
About Patagonia corridors that could be.
Yeah, Patagonia is a little difficult because the wind is so extremely powerful that certain systems cannot be used. They just get burned out. But they had developed different systems there. Instead of like using what looks more like a propeller and on a stick, the normal ones, they have they're more sort of vertical spinning cones. They're not really cones, but it's more like a tube mm-hmm. of windmill material that spins around on its own axis.
Mm-hmm. And that could be used in Patagonia with
absolutely.
Those strong
winds.
Oh,
absolutely. They have been used, and they're good. But we need to move the production, which uses this energy, closer
to industrial centers,
to where we're producing the energy. So that has been the problem. You know, I mean, generally, if you look at, say, Buenos Aires, we've a few very large electricity generation plants which are close to the city, which is makes sense, but they're all fossil fuels.
Yeah, fossil fuels. Yeah.
So if you're going to move, you know, there's hydroelectricity too. I mean, we have massive hydroelectricity.
Yeah.
Brazil, for example, uses 60% of its electricity is hydro already. Argentina, it's, I think, 20-30%, mm-hmm. but it could be more. But really, what we need to be thinking about doing, and this is all over the world, is using less energy.
Yeah, rather than generating more.
Yeah, I mean, you can generate more cleanly, and you can replace more of the percentage that we're using now. But what we're actually doing right now is we're producing more energy on top of fossil fuels, but we're not
replacing. I understand.
Yeah, we're not. Mm-hmm. The use of fossil fuels is actually going up.
Yeah. What about Vaca Muerta and shale oil? I mean, the pipeline bringing gas to the eastern part of the country. Is that bad news for the environment?
The pipeline really doesn't matter, but that will obviously mean that there's going to be more production at Vaca Muerta. Vaca Muerta has two different kinds. It's producing both oil and gas. The problem is fracked gas. Mm-hmm. Fracked gas causes a lot of CH4, which is methane, which is basically what the gas is, to leak into the atmosphere, and that is like 20 times worse than carbon mm-hmm. dioxide. It's 80 times worse over 20 years. Mm-hmm. So what you basically is what it causes is leaks of gas into the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be from the pipelines or the compression systems or the actual pozos, as they call them here, the gas out, and that's a major problem. Mm-hmm. We should not be fracking gas.
Yeah.
The rest of it, they should be allowed to use for a while anyway. But you know,
in the end, we should be replacing fossil fuels sometime
in the future.
Absolutely,
and the whole idea of, you know, of building for export. I mean, we should be producing the energy we need right now, not importing anything, and then using that energy to replace the energy production.
Everybody's thinking about the economic factor, I mean, exporting and generating foreign currency for the country, but mm-hmm. in the terms of Vaca Muerta, this aspect is usually not mentioned. What about lithium? Politicians are very excited about the potential of the country in that regard. Is that a polluting industry?
No, not really. Lithium is, well, first, it's not really an industry, and at least what they're planning in Argentina, they're just planning to take the lithium out and send it to China, Germany, the United States to make batteries.
Mm-hmm.
So in doing that, the problem is the availability of water. So what we're talking about, I mean, lithium occurs in a salt. So what we're actually dealing with are the salars, the salt lakes
in the north,
in the highlands, because basically you've got these areas where instead of the rivers draining into the seas, they're draining into valleys and then drying off. So you've got these giant salt lakes, and there's a lot of lithium. So if you have water, you can extract the lithium without actually digging underground. I mean, it's not mining in the sense that we're used to, where you have to create a big hole in the ground and heat up rock or anything like that. There's nothing. There's no rock involved. It's just salt. But the problem is the availability of water.
Mm-hmm. Does it use a lot of water? The extraction?
It does, and there are better ways of reutilizing the water, which are more expensive and not planned here.
Mm-hmm.
Bolivia is planning to do that now, and it is the country with the largest deposits of lithium.
And they are more advanced in terms of thinking about the environmental aspect.
Thinking about it, yes, but the problem actually between the ABC, which is Argentina, Bolivia, and Chile. Chile is actually the one that's extracting the largest quantities right now. Bolivia has been sitting back and thinking how they can do it in a way where they can actually produce their own batteries locally, so that they can actually not just end up with some money from the exports, but they can actually benefit in their own economy producing something which is high value added, which they can use locally.
This has been super interesting, Tim. Very interesting. I would like to ask you share on the air some information about your work or a webpage or social media account where people can read more about your research, your thesis. I know that you write articles also on climate issues related to local and current affairs.
Okay. So I do have a website which I've been publishing on for nearly 20 years now. It's called Project in English with a J-E-C-T, Project Allende. That's the president's name, or the former president of Chile.
Of Chile, yeah.
So projectallende.org. And actually on Twitter, it's also Project Allende.
Okay, excellent. And that was Tony Phillips, Irish researcher and climate change expert on RAE, Radio Difusión Argentina al Exterior, the international service of the Argentine Radio. Thus we come to the end of today's edition of RAE, Radio Difusión Argentina al Exterior, for Wednesday, April 10, 2024. The sound technician was Walter Danesi and the host, yours truly, Fernando Farias. Thank you very much for listening. Hasta mañana.